If it feels like no one understands your problems or cares to listen, if it feels like there is no one else in this world who has gone through what you have, if you feel like you're so close to giving up but still holding on, Cafe with Monica was made for you. I'll show you how to deal with the everyday and not so everyday situations that surface in the lives of millennials. By sharing my experiences and knowledge, I hope to inform, inspire, and provide solutions to problems that may seem out of reach. So grab your coffee or drink of choice and let's just talk about it. Welcome to Cafe with Monica. This is episode 14. I am Monica, your host, a millennial helping millennials to hashtag just talk about it over coffee. In this episode, we're just going to talk about self-care and self-compassion. And I have the ladies from the Everyday Therapy podcast, Julianne and JC, and we get to hear their story about how they became therapists, how they practice self-compassion and self-care in their daily lives, and some tips that you can use to practice self-care and self-compassion. So I hope you stay tuned to the episode, and I can't for you to listen. Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. I have JC Rader and Julianne Schroeder, and they are from the Everyday Therapy podcast. I am so excited to have them here. Both of them are licensed professional counselors and also registered yoga teachers. How awesome is that? They're therapists who love to have honest conversations about emotional wellness and self-development. And I'm so happy to have them talk about things today. We're going to focus on self-compassion and self-care, what it's like being a therapist, why they got into therapy. So I'm so excited for y'all to hear their story. Well, guys, welcome.
Hello.
Oh my gosh, this is so exciting.
I know. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I love the energy already.
Yes.
Thank you guys so much.
And our favorite topics.
Yes.
Being therapists, yes, self-compassion, guys. Self-care. Let's do this.
And I don't think a lot of people, I think like on Instagram, you know, you see a lot of these quotes like self-compassion, self-care, and it's so nice to double tap on that and like it. But when it comes to actually applying those things outside of Instagram, let's be honest, I don't do that.
Oh,
not
for
all
sure.
The time.
Yeah. I mean, how about the irony when I was recording yesterday a guided meditation on self-compassion, and I was being so perfectionistic and like beating myself up as I was doing it. I was like, whoa, check this out. But in my guided meditation, I said, hey, this is a practice, a process. Be patient with yourself. So I was like, all right, Julianne, how about I do that with myself?
Yeah, yes. You do have to have those internal dialogues with yourself, because it's so easy. I feel like as therapists, you know, we're really good at being having our clients reflect about whatever it is that they're going through, and then us to actually put those in practice. It's hard because we're also human beings, and I don't think people think we're human beings.
Yes. Yeah. I just was reading this article. I don't know if you've seen it, Monica, but it's the 8 things that you wish that your clients would know about you is that you're human and you make mistakes and you don't know it all. Yeah. I think that's a misconception of therapists. Like, we have to work hard too. We have to see our own therapist, you know. Self-compassion is practice. Self-care is practice.
Yeah. And this journey is ever ongoing, right?
Yeah, I don't think self-care and self-compassion ever stops. It's something that you continue to do. And in other episodes, I always talk about how I think people always seek that permanent feeling, like feeling that permanent happiness, that permanent that permanent happiness, the joy and stuff. But the thing is, those feelings are not permanent.
Yeah.
You have to continuously work and do things that are enjoyable and do things that are happy for you and are good for you.
For sure. Yeah, I love that idea. I try and share this with my clients a lot whenever they don't want to feel their feelings, the hard feelings.
That was me yesterday. Anyways, continue.
Me every day. But yeah, feelings are good. Like, you can't have light without dark. You can't have pain without joy. And so, yeah, but we all do want to feel joy, like, 24/7, but we wouldn't really know it was joy if we didn't experience that. So same thing, I think, yeah, self-compassion, self-care, it's a practice, it's a process. And you can't always be good at it. You don't just like get it and you're like, okay, I've achieved self-compassion, now I'm good.
Right,
you know, that would be enlightenment.
Yeah, I love that. So we're going to detract a little bit. I wanted to know specifically, because I've listened to your podcast, but I don't really know your story.
Yeah.
What led you both to therapy? So y'all can take turns telling me sure, what led both of you to therapy.
Oh, you're going to make me go first? I usually default to JC going first. No, this has been... Oh, I should probably not touch the mic. Anyways, this has... Like, doing this podcast has helped me understand, like, the importance of sharing our stories and, you know, being real to our clients. And, you know, I don't have to give, like, the nitty-gritty details, but I do think it's important for others to know that, yeah, I have gone through my own shit. And, you know, growing up, I very much internalized the message that I needed to be perfect, that I should, you know, smile and be grateful at all times. And yeah, I mean, I struggled with comparison deeply and feeling inadequate compared to everybody else. And so that along with, you know, just my genetics predisposed me to some disordered eating, anxiety and depression. And so it wasn't until, like my parents noticed as a high schooler, that I was, you know, isolating, obviously, you know, change in weight, and, you know, was the social butterfly. And then they just noticed something was off with me, that they, turned towards getting me a therapist.
Sorry. And it's okay. I can cut whatever it is.
So yeah, it was through that own process of learning that I didn't have to put on a mask. And that I could have somebody help me and that I didn't need to have it all together. That really like transformed my understanding of dealing with life. And it was such a relief. It was so healing. And I wanted to give that gift to others. So
that's awesome. That's amazing. Thank you for telling me
I've heard your story so many times and I still love hearing it. It's so good. Yeah. So for me, I think like wounded healer, right? Like all therapists and people in the healing, helping profession, we all have our own stories of why it's so important to help other people heal. And yeah, I just recognize, or I guess later on, I recognized at a very young age that I had anxiety. Like I was always worrying about my house burning down or my friends being mad at me, and not a normal amount of stress for a child. Like, it was debilitating. I didn't want to go to school, you know. It was just really hard. It, like, felt like a struggle. Mm-hmm. And so as I got older, just kind of all that worrying, like, became apathetic in a way. And I started doing drugs. And drug of choice was Xanax, which makes a lot of sense. I had anxiety, right?
Self-medicating.
Yeah.
Just didn't have the doctor's note, but what's wrong with that? I mean, there is something wrong with that.
Yes.
We do not advise that.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't, it wasn't paired with like coping skills or a therapist at the time, you know? So yeah, I think that that's what, like going through that experience, and obviously my mom seeing that, she was very open. She saw a therapist. Like that was just kind of part of our family of like to rely on therapy. So there wasn't a lot of stigma in my family around therapy, which was really cool. Don't think a lot of people have that story. Mm-hmm. So I started seeing a therapist, and I felt like for me what was so helpful was the information. Like I feel like if I have information of like, okay, what is this thing anxiety that I'm worrying about? Like why do I have it? And then what can I do about it? It was like a game changer for me. And I was like, I have to share this with people. Like other people are struggling with this. And I fought it for so long. I was like, I'm not going to make money. Like it's going to be hard. And I like went through 7 different majors. And I was finally like, this is what I'm supposed to do. Like this is the only thing that fits for me. So yeah, that's kind of my story.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Yeah, I think, I had a similar story, and I talk about it in another podcast. Growing up with a family member who was an alcoholic and experiencing grief and death at a very young age, like year after year after year, and that was really, really anxiety provoking. There's a lot of depression and all that. And I remember though, like when I was in high school, I already knew I wanted to be a therapist. Like I always knew that I wanted to help people. And when I was in college, I became a mentor and I'm like, oh, I just want to provide therapy because these kids really, like these freshmen coming into the, like to the university, they have no idea. They're going through so much anxiety, so much stress.
Oh, yes.
And it's like they're thrown to be adults and they don't know what they're doing, you know?
Yeah,
like
you're supposed to have it all figured out whenever you graduate high school or graduate college or just being an adult.
Exactly. And so I knew that that's why I wanted to go into therapy. And I saw a therapist. And I remember being super uncomfortable with my first therapist because she used a lot of silence.
Ooh.
And for me, I mean, I know why she was using it because I was always uncomfortable with just like honing that feeling and like really reflecting. I always wanted to like keep talking and keep talking. Even in my
Move through it.
Yeah. Just like, no, it's like. Come on, tell me something, like tell me what I should be doing, you know? And I remember that was a struggle when I was in grad school, being able to do silence myself in an appropriate way while we were doing like exercises and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I don't like silence. I don't want to do this.
Right. Well, it just speaks to, I think, that us people as a whole, like we're not always taught to deal with uncomfortable emotions, right? Like we just, we aren't. We don't gravitate towards things that make us uncomfortable. And so, I mean, that's just why, like, okay, let's, you know, like, just stop with the stigma on therapy. Like, we don't get taught emotions 101. Or if we do, we're not really taught. I mean, I'm just going to be really transparent here. I had my own therapy session today and, you know, had an experience where I realized that I've been half-assing my emotions. And, you know, I was grateful for my therapist who's older, who said, you know, like, we really aren't, you know, she said, in my doctorate program, like, you know, we just, we're taught how we think through things, but to really slow down and to feel in our body. She made me do that today. You know, just all that to be said that, like, we resist the uncomfortable and we're not taught how to deal with it.
Exactly. Yeah. My therapist last week said, and I want to say this quote because it was so powerful. She's like, Monica, stop setting yourself on fire for to keep other people warm.
Oh,
and yeah, that's a like, great one. Yeah.
How did you know? How did you know? And so that was my homework. And I think a lot of people also think that therapy is passive and that it's not direct and we're not going to give homework. But yeah, she gave me homework on figure out in what ways are you setting yourself on fire to keep other people warm.
Would you share? Like, I'm curious, what is one way that like one would do that? Cause I get the quote, but I like an example would be helpful.
So, for instance, like I, in my current job, my supervisor asked me to be a mentor and I told her, set a boundary. And I said, I won't be a mentor. I won't be the main mentor for this other counselor. But I will be there if she has any questions. Then we had a meeting and, she announced, oh yeah, Monica's going to be the main mentor. And I didn't speak up. So I set myself on fire and now I had this extra job duty on top of already the job duties that I have.
Okay.
And so she'll always ask me to add more and more to my plate of things that I'm not passionate about. And so, yeah, I was setting myself on fire.
Yes, that's so good. I need to do that homework, I think.
Yeah, I could. Yeah.
Figure out
I think
what you're setting yourself on
fire. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
Like, what boundaries do I need to set? Yeah.
I'm like, sure, pretty much, like, most of the female population could benefit from looking at that. Right?
Yeah. No, yeah.
Definitely.
100%. Well, I wanted to, since we start, since now you said your story and we talked a little bit about how, you know, therapy, therapists need therapy. Why did you guys start the Everyday Therapy podcast?
Yeah.
How did that come?
Oh, I love this question. I think both Julianne and I, we both saw that we were kind of sharing the same messages to our clients. And it was exciting every time we shared it. And we wanted a place for other people who maybe aren't exposed to therapy to know, like, what we're talking about. And also my clients to hear it again. Like, I have to tell myself, you'll have to check back in with the, like, how am I setting myself on fire, you know, quote. so many times throughout your lifetime. And so, like, our episode on boundaries and, like, how to set boundaries with people, like, I have to go back to that stuff. And so it's just a bigger platform to share our message, to talk about therapy in a laid back way. Like, it doesn't have to be clinical. It doesn't have to be scary.
Yeah. We're not hiding behind a clipboard diagnosing you.
Yeah. Yeah. We're real. And yeah, we've gotten a lot of great feedback about, like, that's kind of, we're relatable and informational, and yeah, kind of give some concrete tips in there too. What about, is there anything more you want to add?
Yeah. I mean, for so many reasons, whether it's shame or finances or schedule or just maybe not the ability to prioritize oneself and one's mental health, realize that therapy is not as accessible for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I still wanted to be able to give and to have people be able to maybe develop new perspectives and as well as take away some, like, practical coping skills to improve themselves. I mean, like, the more that we can learn to take care of ourselves and grow, like, the better that we can show up in relationships, at work, and, like, it's just, you know, that's a gift that keeps on giving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think a lot of people are just, who've never gone through therapy or have seen maybe just either whatever their family members have gone through or maybe a close friend who's gone to therapy, for them, just the unknown, not knowing what that experience is like. Mm-hmm. I think even just having normal day conversations like that on your podcast, that speaks to someone that says, like, okay, it also shows that you guys are just human beings. And so I can see somebody listening to your episodes and be like, I want them to be my therapist, mm-hmm. because I kind of know them in some capacity.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of less anxiety provoking.
For sure. Yeah. And that wasn't really our intention with the podcast. And we have gotten a lot of new clients from that as well. So that's been, like, cool validation that the podcast is helpful for people.
Yeah. And, like, to ease that anxiety and the mystery, and for them to know that, like, get a sense of who we are.
Yeah.
And, like, what we believe in a way. And
we can often be so hard on ourselves for being overprepared, for being too controlling over the situation. And so I want you guys to talk about, what is self-compassion to you?
Yeah. Oh gosh, it's so much.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a way of life. I don't know, just using the podcast as an example, I feel like it has been so hard because, especially at the very beginning of, you know, leaving the show or leaving a therapy session and just being like, oh, that wasn't my best self. That didn't come out right. I wish I would have said something differently. I wish I would have, you know, guided this person in a different way. So that's been, yeah, it's been, like, really hard and, like, a perfect opportunity to practice self-compassion. But yeah, just being present with yourself and non-judgmental. And it takes practice. Like, Kristen Neff is amazing, and she's done so much research on self-compassion and has practices for it. So, and we can talk a little bit more about that, but you're kind of the self-compassion expert.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
You do workshops on this.
Too. I don't know. Yeah.
How would you explain it to people?
Yeah. I mean, I will just say, I think you have to be like 10,000 hours in to be an expert. Oh, thank you.
Okay.
That's very flattering. I mean, I am very passionate about it, and because I believe that it can really change and help with most issues. Right. Thank you. So I think self-compassion gives us an opportunity to look at the ways that we can grow, but also the ways that we acknowledge that we are human and learn to be able to take appropriate responsibility for ourselves, but in a way that's not shaming. So then we can be able to reach our goals and be able to love ourselves and love others in a way that serves us.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking about how Kristen Neff explains, like, the little process, the self-compassion break she has on her website of, like, the first step, acknowledging your humanness. Mm-hmm. And is that the first step?
Well, it does like go with acknowledgement. But yeah, that mindfulness of being able to kind of like name what it is that is bringing up that distress, like, right. Okay. And like acknowledging the thought and the feeling, right. That, and then remembering that you're human and that a lot of people have encountered those thoughts, those feelings.
You're not alone in it. Yeah.
Which is so much what therapy is.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the last part of like, may you be kind to yourself, because how often do I, or, you know, maybe you as a listener, talk to yourself in like a negative way, like, you idiot, you know, or the tone of voice that I use with myself. Like, I would never talk to Julian in that way.
Like, yeah, or even the way that like you like hold in your body. Like, I know that when I get like hard on myself, like I tense up. Like, you know, like, and that is even just like not being kind.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's just, yeah.
It's a lot. So it's been really helpful to be honest. Like, this is, I mean, I guess it's an aspect of self-compassion that I knew before, but I guess it's like, I've really seen this example of like, so after the podcast, or we do therapy together as well. Like, we have two different rooms, but we'll see each other after our therapy sessions, and to like talk through something with Julianne. And so to really experience compassion from another person, another human. And she says, like, she's giving me her honest feedback in a compassionate way. You know, she may still say like, oh, you did a shitty job, but
wait, no, you would never say that.
But hey, like, you could maybe do this differently. Yeah. You could have done this differently, but you still like did the best that you could there, or whatever it is. Has been really helpful. I'm like, oh, okay, like, that's kind of how I can do that for myself. But yeah, that's a little bit about self-compassion.
And how do you guys, so oftentimes I see self-compassion and self-care being said at the same time. Mm. And do you guys feel like there's a difference between both of them, or they're just kind of similar, just people say it different ways, or I don't know.
Sure. Yeah.
It's a good question.
No, I mean, I get the overlap, and I would say that self-compassion is absolutely a major component of self-care, by being able to practice that mindfulness and attunement to self and identify what one needs, and that, you know, learn to be recognize that we're human and we have needs, et cetera, et cetera. But I will say self-care is, I mean, self-compassion is helpful for emotional self-care. But if we look at self-care, and there are many aspects to it, mm-hmm. self-compassion might not tell you that you need to like pay your bills, right? Right? I mean, like the boring self-care. The logistical stuff. Like, it might not always alert you to like, oh, I need to go to the doctor, right? So I think there's, you know, some things that don't necessarily fall into self-compassion.
Yeah. I totally agree that, I think that self-compassion falls underneath self-care.
Well, absolutely. I think so. But yeah, like, self-compassion is not if you don't want to pay your bills and be like, oh, treat yourself. I'm going to go to do a massage instead of going to pay my bill.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Carl Rogers' quote, if I can just love and accept myself just the way that I am, then change naturally occurs. Because we often think, like, in order to lose weight or change something about ourselves, like, we have to kick ourselves in the butt and pull our bootstraps up. I don't know, all the sayings that people use to, you know, like, be hard on themselves. And that's, like, kind of how we have to do it. But it's really paradoxical and the opposite of that. Like, if we can love ourselves right where we are, the self-compassion pieces, then we're going to take care of ourselves. We are going to respect our bodies and, like, know what's going on. And then that change, I mean, it may or may not occur, but the change is, like, in your heart.
Right.
Ultimately.
Do you guys have, like, a self-care routine or things that you do, maybe not a routine, but things that you found helpful when practicing self-care for yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm pretty flexible in my self-care routine, and I think that's, like, good for me. Mm-hmm. But as of late, I have been making sure to have my coffee outside in the mornings. Also, yeah, I'm very protective of my mornings. Jason can attest to that. But yeah, getting outside like helps me like get out of my head, practice that mindfulness. Also just, you know, it's therapeutic benefits of just literally being outside in nature. So that's one that I like try to do as much as possible, even if I am multitasking at times and answering emails on my phone while walking outside. Like, I'm going to try to get it in. Yoga is, yeah, definitely self-care for me. Yeah.
That's awesome. What about you, JC?
Yeah, I feel like my self-care routine has been lacking lately, which there's have some ebb self-compassion there. Okay. Yeah, yeah, it does like ebb and flow for me for sure. But I think one of the things that like I've always stuck with is mindfulness, like setting aside time to whether it be like an informal mindfulness practice or formal, like sitting for 10 minutes or whatever. And a gratitude journal. So we both love this journal. What is it called, Julian? I don't even know.
What journal? Oh, are you talking about our planner? Oh, yeah. The Desire Map Planner by Daniel Laporte. Subtle plug if you want to be a sponsor.
Yes. So she has a great, like, it's basically a journal, but for a, or it's a planner, but a journal. Like, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. So at the very bottom, it has a gratitude journal. And I've always, or I've done that for a really long time. So I've kind of like stuck with that. But I think sometimes we think that self-care is like you were talking about, like it's getting a massage or doing all the, you know, hot tea, hashtag self-care, doing all the things. But for me, it's like planning my day. So like I'm doing really well if I've like written down my schedule. Like I have it on my phone and computer and whatnot, but it feels really good. And it's really important for me to see that and plan out my meals and those types of things. It's that boring self-care, but it's what I need.
Oh, I bet Monica loves it as a three to be like organized and check things off your to-do list. You know it. Just like get to you.
You know it. And for me, the way I'm trying to practice self-care is letting myself rest and know when to rest, because sometimes I'll be tired and I know when to take a nap. But the three in me is like, that hour, I could probably record a podcast episode. I could probably answer these emails. But it's like, no. And I actually, sometimes I'll have to schedule just time for myself, just not to do anything.
Yeah.
And I will, like, put my laptop away, put everything away. I'll have, like, a movie that I want to watch. And I'm like, let me just be in the moment and do that, not be, because sometimes
it's mindfulness watching a movie without your phone. Seriously,
I don't know how to do that.
I was seeing that, like, if I was watching like online, like if I was watching The Bachelorette, I would also be on Instagram. I'm like, what the heck, I'm not even paying attention.
Yeah.
And my husband would tell me, you're not, are you even watching? Yeah, I am, I know what's going on. It's
I so know that.
But you know, I do need to be focused on one thing. Or if it's just listening to a podcast, I know I'd be listening to a podcast but also be on Instagram. And it's just not, it's just making like sure that I'm giving myself time to rest.
I love the idea of unitasking. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it is a form of mindfulness of doing one thing at a time. But Brené Brown talks a lot about, like, her white noise. She'll, like, schedule in her calendar white noise time. And it's, like, blocked off. It's her time that she does whatever she wants with. So it sounds like you're already like embodying that. You're basically Brené Brown.
Yep. That's it.
How do you practice, like, is that also self-compassion for you, or do you have any practices that help you be kind to yourself?
So like my job, I require, like, I have 100 clients because it's a state agency. And sometimes the way that I can practice self-compassion is knowing that I cannot be present for all 100 clients that day.
It's okay.
And that I'm only present for these three people that I have scheduled, the two people that I probably need to have a phone call with, and that's it. If other people are asking of me through email, through, you know, I just say, that is all I can do. One time a counselor sent me an email and said, just as a reminder, say this to yourself, today you did enough. And I was like, yeah. So that's kind of something that I do every day. Like, today I did enough.
Yeah. Not putting too much on your plate that you know you can't fulfill. And then beating yourself up about it.
No to things.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of things hard. As I'm doing this podcast, as I'm doing my internship hours, a lot of people were asking a lot of me.
Us.
And no, it's like, sorry. No, my priority is to get my internship hours and my passion project, which is, you know, podcasting. But I also want to help other people with their podcasting because that helps me grow as a podcaster. But that's something that I want to do. Mm-hmm. I also do photography. That's not something that I want to do to monetize. But I've had several people ask me, can you take me photos? And I just say no. Because it's something that I like to do as a hobby. And I don't want to, I said, like maybe if I have some time, but honestly, I'd rather, because I'm just thinking, oh, that's work. I have to edit. I have to send this. And then my perfectionism is going to kick in. And then I'm going to want to do it as perfect as I possibly can. And putting so much pressure on myself when it's like, you got into photography for the fun of it, not to become the next wedding photographer or influencer photographer.
Yeah. I think ego can definitely get in the way, right, of being able to say no. Like, I get it. Like, I'm a 2 with a 3 wing. I think, I don't know who I am.
I don't know who I am. Right. I'm talking about existentialism.
Yeah, right. Yes. I mean, are we? That was me as a teenager looking in the mirror. I'm not kidding. Like, who am I really? Like, I am, like, try to ask myself the big questions at night. Like, really, what is life? Anyways, sidetracking back to ego though, of like, you know, thinking that like we have to do all the things and be all the things for people, right? To prove that we're enough. And like when we are able to say like, hey, like I honor what is in me, right? And also on a practical level, I like heard somebody say this. I don't know if either of you have come across this, but like be aware of lukewarm yeses and then start to like go towards the hell yes. Mm. And that can help you then say the no, right?
Yeah, yes. I've caught myself doing that. Like if somebody will DM me and I'm not super freaking excited to message them back, I'm like, maybe this is not something I should be doing, you know?
Yes.
Because you automatically, when you get a DM or somebody sends you a message and it's like awesome, it'd be an awesome opportunity, you're like, yes, I need to, or it's in the back of your, like, I need to message them back. But if it's like something like, sorry.
Yeah, but it's just more to do. Yeah, I think that you only have like a certain, like I think of like your iPhone battery percentage, like you only have a certain amount, a percent. And a lot of times, you know, we're trying to give 50 more percent than we have to give.
Because that's the achiever in me. Like the achiever in me is just like, what is the next thing that I can achieve? What is the next thing and the next thing?
Yeah.
But it's just, I don't know if you know who Dr. Courtney Baker is.
Yeah, her name has come up.
Sounds familiar.
Okay. Well, she kind of mentors female entrepreneurs, and I had like the discovery call with her, and I told her, you know, everything that I was putting myself on, and she was like, "What are you doing to celebrate?" Mm. And I was like, "I'm doing the next thing, like the next thing that comes to level up that thing." And he's like, "No, like you need it, like whether that be, you go if you love lattes, you go and just read and have a latte.
Yes,
like it doesn't like have that to be this big celebration." So whenever I did my podcast launch party, it wasn't because I wanted so many people to come. It wasn't because I wanted this big party Instagrammable thing for my feed. It was because that was my way of saying this is time to celebrate what I accomplished, because I had been wanting to do this since 2015, and yet it took 4 years for me to actually do something like this.
Oh, I'm so happy for
you. So I had done like videos. I had so many videos that I just would post. I would do a lot of Snapchat back then. It was a lot of Snapchat. But then I
MySpace,
just,
Zanga.
Yeah. And I just never uploaded this because I was so just self-critical of myself. And I knew I didn't want to do video because that was just something that was super anxiety provoking for me. And then my husband was like, why don't you just do a podcast? Like, no one has to, like, you could be in your PJs and you can do this podcast. I'm like, that's so true.
Also an incentive, if you ever have thought like yoga might be helpful, you can always wear yoga pants and write it off as being a yoga teacher. So
I love that.
Yeah.
Have you ever felt burnout in your life, and how did you get out of it?
Oh yeah. For sure. Yeah.
The short version.
Yeah, short version. You can find the real long version on our podcast and listen to the episode on burnout. So I guess the major signals to being burnt out was that my personality started to change. I was irritable. I was isolating. Being around people really fills me up. And then like the really low point where I knew something had to change was when I felt like this sense of apathy was in session, a group session, and literally had the thought like, I don't give a about what they're saying. And then I cried about it afterwards because I care so much.
You cared. Oh my gosh.
Like, right. But like, I just, that was so beyond tapped out. And I was, you know, drinking copious amounts of coffee, excuse me. Like, couldn't sleep. Just trudging through life. It wasn't good.
Yeah. And how did you get out of it?
I decided that something needed to change. So I cut back working. And then I went on a vacation, and I came back. I was crying because I started to feel like myself again, like, you know, happy tears.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, on a deeper level, it was, like, trusting that, like, I didn't need to run myself into the ground to secure my future. That, like, I mean, just using my faith that all would be taken care of if I eased back. So.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people need to hear that because – burnout is real. I think there's like this big stigma that millennials are lazy, but we're not. We work so hard,
yeah.
Often too hard to try to prove this whole stereotype of who we are. And where we do too much of our work or put out too much pressure on ourselves to be perfect, especially now with social media and everything, we grew up in a social media life. And I think that people really will understand that burnout is real and that you just have to catch yourself because you know yourself. You're the expert in your life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love that article by BuzzFeed that went viral that millennials are the burnout generation. Like, and it's not, she doesn't really explain, like, a how to get over burnout. It's more like, it this has to be real. I mean, you can take care of yourself and make changes just like Julianne did, but it's like a cultural systemic shift or, like, being able to see it differently and not putting so much pressure on yourself, not having to do it to get your worthiness.
Yeah.
By doing so much.
Mm-hmm. It's practicing self-care and self-compassion.
For sure. Know? Yeah. On another level.
Yeah. And so that brings me to my last question. I ask this to all my guests on the show, and that is, what is one thing that you wish people would talk about more that isn't talked about? Hashtag I need content.
Yeah, I think we recently did an episode on depression, and that really hit home for me. I think that people are more apt to speak about anxiety, and that's a little easier. I feel like everybody in social media, like influencers, are like, I have anxiety now. But people, you know, it's rare that they will say that they have depression. And I even had a client the other day. She's so sweet. I love her so much. But she was like on a date with a new guy. And she was like, and I told him about my anxiety. I didn't want to tell him about my depression yet. Like, that's maybe later down the line. And so I think it just speaks to, you know, not that she's doing anything wrong. But yeah, there's a fear of talking about depression. So.
Well, thank you guys for that. Yeah. So now where can people find you if they want to know more about you ladies?
Yeah. So we are in Dallas. We practice counseling at White Rock Counseling. So just whiterockcounseling.com. Yes, that's right. And then we have the Everyday Therapy podcast. Also, it's on all podcast platforms and everydaytherapypodcast.com as well.
What about your Instagram handle?
Oh, yeah. Those too.
Yeah. So Everyday Therapy Podcast, White Rock Counseling.
Yes. Thank you, ladies.
They're easy.
Yeah. Thank you, ladies, so much for having us. Yeah, and, like, I'm glad that we're, like, in this together, right? Yes. Spreading the word.
Yes.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks for listening to Cafe with Monica. This was made for you. So be sure to visit cafewithmonica.com to access the show notes, where I write tips and additional resources for this episode in a location convenient for you. And if you love this episode and found value and can't wait to hear more, go ahead and subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. It would mean the world to me. I can't wait for you to listen to the next episode. So see you guys next time.